Morning, Chairperson, how are you?
And how are you?
I'm okay, Chair.
Are we able to start?
Not now. We have got only 4 members so far. We need 2 more. Morning, Chair.
Morning, morning.
Yes, we do have 6 members now. We can start with the meeting.
Okay.
We are. Okay, go ahead, Chair.
Morning, honorable members, and our officials. We're going to start with the meeting to adopt the minutes as the per the decision of the portfolio committee. I request Mr. Adams or Mr. Matonsi to read the previous minutes.
Yes, I'll do that, Chairperson. Then the next one that we need to adopt from last year is 18 October 2022, where the Government Printing Works, the Department of Home Affairs, were briefing the committee on their annual report, Chairperson, towards our BRRR report.
Members, these are the minutes of the 13th of October, 2022. If there's any issue you have picked up on the minutes, you can correct. If there's no issue, can I invite for mover for the adoption?
Chair, I'll move for the adoption.
Thank you, Honorable Pillay. Any seconder?
Seconder, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mulekwa. Any objection? No objection, the minutes are carried. Can you move the second one?
Okay, Chair. I've got minutes here of 21 October, where the content advisor was briefing the committee on the BRRR report, and it was adopted in that meeting.
Members, if you want to comment in the minutes on the change, some of the issues.
Move for adoption, Chairperson.
Okay, Honorable Mulekwa, I move for the adoption.
I'll second, Chair.
Honorable Rose, thank you very much. Secondly, any objection? No objection, the minutes are carried.
Then it's minutes of the 25th of October, the BRRR report again. Then we also did a feedback on the draft job profile for the public office bearer, that is the chairperson of the IEC, the vice chair and full commissioner, as well as part-time commissioners.
Any matter here, members? Can I invite for mover for the adoption?
Chair, I'll move for the adoption.
Honorable Rose, move for the adoption in second.
Shall second.
Honorable Pillay, seconding. Any objection? No objection, the minutes are carried.
Then the next one, Chair, is meeting on the 1st of November, 2022, The department briefed the committee on the first and second quarters of 2022-2023. And then also, yeah, it was a feedback as well on the job profile of chair, vice chairperson, full-time commissioners, and part-time commissioners, chair.
Any matter on this minutes, members? Any mover for the adoption?
Chair, I'll move for the adoption.
Thank you, Honorable Pillay. Move for the adoption. Seconder?
I'll second,
chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Ross and Honorable Mulekwa. Any objection? No objection, the minutes are carried. Can you move?
There. Chairperson, minutes of 8 November, that was the joint briefing on by CETA, by the Department of Home Affairs and CETA on the fight against war on queues and chronic issues of network downtimes at DHA offices and the rollout of DHA services to the banks and mobile units.
Okay, Mr. Martin, can you quote the recommendation on this one? Just to check.
Okay, should I go through them quickly?
Yeah.
Committee resolution, DHA and CETA should work closely to resolve the issue of network downtime and implement the joint implementation plan. DHA should roll out BABs to include bookings for collection of smart ID cards and passports. The system should use USSD to ensure that people who do not have smartphones can make appointments. DHA should replace the aging ICT infrastructure to improve connectivity, and the dual links should be introduced and terminated at different places. The committee secretary will forward the complaint letter mentioned in the opening statement to relevant official.
Okay. I deliberately wanted members to check the recommendations, but today we're dealing with this matter. Just for noting, I think we can take it up when we discuss in the PC. Any mover for adoption?
Move for adoption, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mulekwa. One second.
I'll second, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ross. Any objection? No objection. The minutes are carried.
Yeah. Chairperson, the next one is 15 November, where we had lawyers for human rights to brief the committee on the issue of statelessness in South Africa. That was on 15 November last year.
Thank you, members. If there's no any issue on the minutes, can I invite move for the adoption?
Sorry, Chair.
Ross?
Chair, there's just a typo at the bottom of page 3.
Okay. Bottom, page 3, eh?
Yeah, so responses.
Okay.
Yes, that's all.
Okay, thank you.
With that correction, I would move for adoption.
Thank you, Ross. Move for the adoption. Seconder?
A second, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Pillay. An objection? Yeah. No objection. The minutes are carried. Can you move?
The 22nd of November, with the minister and the BM commissioner briefed the committee on the residence for the festive season, update on the establishment of the BMA draft regulations.
Members, if there's no any other matter, can you move for the adoption?
I'll move for the adoption.
I'll second, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Pillay. Honorable Ross for seconding. Any objection? No objection. The minutes are carried.
Yeah. On 30 November, briefing by the Department of Home Affairs, IEC, Parliament Legal Service on the proposed amendments from the National Council of Provinces on the Electoral Amendment Bill, Committee's consideration and deliberation of the proposed amendments of the Electoral Bill from the NSOP, and then briefing by the Department on inquiry sent to them by members of the committee. Yeah, and response by the Minister, IEC and Legal Service on the Electoral Bill.
Thank you. If there's any other matter, can I request more for the adoption?
More for adoption, Chairperson.
Move for the adoption, Honorable Mulegwa. Seconder?
I second, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Kanyile, for second. Any objection? No objection, the minutes are carried. This is the last one.
No, the last one will be in February this year. Yeah, and then here is briefing by DHA Senior Counsel and Parliament Legal Service on proposed amendments from the NSOP on the Electoral Bill, and then briefing by the State Law Advisor on the list of amendments.
Okay, thank you. Can I invite move of adoption?
Move for adoption, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mulegwa. Seconder?
I second, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Kanyile, seconding. Any objection? No objection, the minutes are carried. Can you read the last minutes?
The last minutes is this year, 2023, the Content Advisor briefing the committee on submission on receipt on the Electoral Amendment Bill, committee deliberation on the submission on the Electoral Amendment Bill, and then briefing by the content advisor on the study tour on electronic voting and the committee strategic planning sections.
Thank you. There's no any other matter. Can we move for the adoption?
Chair Canberra, Eddie just dropped the attendance.
I'm sorry.
I'll move for the adoption, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Pillay. Seconder?
I'll second, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Kanyile. Any objection? No objection, the minutes are carried. Members, thanks very much for considering the minutes that reflect our deliberations in all the committee meetings. We hope that we'll adopt all the minutes by the end of May, Mr. Matonsi. I'm not sure, but will guide us. Is there any other matter, Mr. Matonsi, that you want to?
No, there's no other matter, Chairperson. We're just waiting for 9 o'clock for the meeting.
Okay.
Okay, sure.
There are two issues I want to check, Mr. Matonsi, before. I asked yesterday, did you receive the documents, the amendment, what do you call it? So the consequential amendments brief presentation?
Yes, I did receive it last night. I forwarded to members.
What time?
I think there was, I got it around 10 o'clock, but I think I sent it maybe towards around 11 at night. I only saw it late.
Okay. Can we request you, Mr. Matonsi, to facilitate MENCO? So that we deal with issues, then we'll bring them to the committee.
Okay.
I think in the last 3-4 committee meetings, there were issues that the department ought to have interacted with the committee in a particular manner. But I think this we're experiencing a challenge. So can you subject that item to the MENCO so that we deal with it? Lastly, I think in MENCO, you also remind members, you brief us on the issues, documents that in the last meeting decided that we must get. You'll brief us on that area in the last committee meeting that we were at.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
We'll reconvene at 9 o'clock, members.
Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Matons? Yep.
Hello, Chair. Well,
the debate is starting what time?
It should be in the, I'm not sure, but it should be in the afternoon
for today.
The session. First one starts at 10, but we are in a committee, and then there's another one that starts at 2, and then there's one at just past 4.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think the morning one we can't make because of committee, but then the next one is at 2.
Okay.
Chairperson?
Yes?
Yeah, previously, I don't know if they will do it like now. If one of our department in the security cluster is meeting, let's say 10 o'clock, then our committee is supposed to go there and support them. So, but I'm not sure if they will stick to that. I know for the meeting of the 23rd and the 30th, one of our security cluster department, they are having budget votes from 10 o'clock. But we'll be guided, I'm sure.
I think tomorrow is international relation.
Yeah, no, I'm saying where it clashes with our meeting.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. So, I'm sure Honorable Ross is not debating in health. You see, it's starting at 10.
I'm just going to get a cup of coffee.
There's the office of the Chief Justice today, Chair, from 16:45 to 18:30.
At what time? Oh, 16:45.
Yeah, that's office of the Chief Justice. At the same time, it's Statistics South Africa. And then the one from 2 to 4:15 is Sports, Arts and Culture and Employment and Labour.
Okay.
Sure.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members.
Good morning, DG.
Recording in progress.
No. Hello? Hello? No. We're starting it with the other stakeholders. It was 9 o'clock, but with the committee, it was adopting minutes from 8 o'clock, from 8:30 to 9 o'clock. Yeah. Okay. I think the commissioner is not in. I mean, the chairperson. Eh? Okay. No, I just want to read this apology. Okay.
Eddie, your mic is on.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, Chair.
Morning.
Yes, Chair. It's 1 minute past nine. We can start with the meeting, Chair. Over to you.
No, thanks, Mr. Matonsi. Good morning to all members, honorable members. Morning, the Minister, Home Affairs, Deputy Minister, DG, and all your colleagues. Morning, the Chairperson of the IEC, Commissioner Miyatsai, and all other commissioners, the Chief Executive Officer, and all the executive, the Parliamentary Legal Services, the State Law Advisors who are in attendance, and all our officials. Members, today will receive briefing on the two issues which are on the agenda from the Minister of Home Affairs and the on the status of the ABs and the BCMS. And Mr. Matonsi requests that we'll start with item number 7 because there are issues around the item number 1, which is for the Minister. We have requested that I must raise it to this meeting that we have requested that we must receive a representation of this in relation to the electoral amendment or consequential amendments 2 days before or in time so that members are able to reflect and run on the notes that might have been presented. And I'm advised that the minutes or the presentation was sent to our attention last night at 10 o'clock or so. And it's not how we agreed with the minister. And I think the minister will take responsibility. Perhaps will assist us to understand why all the time the documents which the committee are requested, either not they're not submitted to the committee on time, or we force the minister to do that. And I don't think that is how we must work with the ministry. So this item, I think, we'll be able to deal with that when we reach that point. I'm just raising pointers of discomfort, Minister, on this item. Members, we note that the budget votes have started in the session, and we know that the other members are serving in various committees. We may need to see how we navigate our portfolio committee or time so that we allow members to prepare and to attend in the House. I will take this opportunity again, Mr. Matonsi, to welcome all members who is in attendance, taking account of the issues we've dealt with in the previous committee meeting. And I think those decisions that we've taken will be able to be implemented or be considered by both the Portfolio Committee and the Ministry. Can I invite you, Mr. Matonsi, to deal with item number 2? Then we'll invite the minister to introduce item number 7. And then we'll take this item of the consequential amendment as the last item to the meeting. Thank you, Mr. Matonsi.
Thanks, Chairperson. I've got two apologies from the committee, that of Ms. van der Merwe, and then and also Ms. Tito. And then also Ms. Mulekwa, she will leave at 11 o'clock. She has got an urgent matter that she needs to deal with. Ms. Lekwa says she's boarding from 10:15 to come to Cape Town. And also from the IEC is the an apology from the IEC Chairperson, Mr. Muyepia. That's all from my side, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. Noted. Any other apology, Minister?
No, thank you. Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to members of the committee. The minister, the only apology I have is that of the minister. He's still struggling with connectivity, but he will join us during the course of the meeting. I'm happy that we are going to start with the item number 7, which we will carry through and then move on to others. But with me today here, Chairperson, I have the DG, Mr. McCord there, and then I have CFO, Mr. Holombay. I have Mr. Siyakoza from the Office of the Ministry, Mr. Sigama, DDG Civics, Mr. Mavuso, as well as Mr. Simons, and the Commissioner from the PMA and the Deputy Commissioner and myself. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Deputy Commissioner Love.
Good morning, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee and the Deputy Minister. I am standing in for the Commission. We have apologies from the Chairperson who is on leave. We no longer have a Deputy Chair. The term of office of Commissioner Love came to an end. The other two commissioners, Dr. Masugu is on an international assignment, and the judge will be joining us, but she's also working on the Eswatini assignment. But I'm joined here by members of the executive led by our CEO, Mr. Mamabulo, Mr. George Matangu, Mr. Mosri, and Madam Henning, as well as our CFO. I think mainly those are the representatives of the Commission. And thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Mashinini. Parliamentary Legal Services.
Morning, Chairperson. It's Talana Ali. Yes. I'm alone here today. That's all.
Okay, thank you. State law advisors?
Chairperson, we don't have the state law advisors. They can only be with us if there's an executive B.
Okay. Thanks.
I Chair?
Mr. Matonsi?
Yeah, okay, no, I can hear you now. You just went quiet.
Oh, no, I was saying that all the apologies have been noted and accepted. We'll now move to the first item to be presented by the department, Deputy Minister.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I will request for purposes of bandwidth strength that I switch off my camera if that will be allowed, Chair.
Yes, yes, I think also we're trying to do the same. Thank you, Deputy Minister.
Okay, thank you, Chair. We have been requested by the committee to come and brief it on the status of the automated biometric information system, as well as the BMSCS. So I will request, without wasting time, that we shoot straight to the DG and Mr. Mavuso, who will be leading this particular presentation. We'll then come in when we have to take questions and answers later on after members have deliberated. But we do have the presentation ready for you. Thank you.
Thank you, DM. DG?
Thank you so much. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Good morning, DM. So Mr. Mavuso will take us through the presentation, which is really, Chairperson, an update on where we are with regards to the biometric movement control system, or BMCS as we call it, and then of course the automated biometric identification system, in short known as ABIS. Over to you, Mr. Mavuso, and through you, Chair.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. I will just take you through the presentation. So the presentation is divided into two sections. So the first section deals with the biometric movement control system, and then the second one deals with the ABIS. So as requested, Chair, the purpose is to update the committee on the rollout on the BMCS, and then the second one is to give the status report on ABIS. So, Chair, just as a way of background and just as a members, just to recall that the project that was initiated to replace the current movement control system, because we were required to actually capture the biometrics of all travelers who come into the country. So the biometric movement control systems will replace the EMCS, which was actually implemented in just before the World Cup in 2010. And the enhancements that were done in 2013. So this system obviously enables the capturing of the fingerprints and facial biometric data for all travelers who enter and exit South Africa. The fingerprint and facial biometric data will also be used as part of tracing the movement of travelers in the country and identifying both citizens and foreigners, so contributing to the improvement of national security, but also working with other law enforcement agencies to be able to identify people who are in the country. So we completed the development of the system in 2021 and started a pilot at the four airports where we had to upgrade the bandwidth because the system required at least at a minimum level a 2 meg line to be able to operate. We then, including the rollout, obviously, there were a few issues relating to stability, the bug fixing issues, which we dealt with during the pilot. So the developers helped us to resolve that. So in the financial year that we just completed in March, we were able to roll out the system at 34 ports of entry. Just to indicate that the rollout that we did was not 200% replaced all the machines that are EMCS, but we replaced up to 30% on the immigration counters so that we continue to run the parallel system. This helps the users to actually, you know, get familiar with the system, but also to ensure that that environment stabilizes, and but also does not deprive travelers to be processed in an event that you've got user-related matters or environmental issues. So in the new financial year, which we are currently in, we are going to obviously ensure that we increase the coverage in all the ports, and also that the rollout in the main included the creation of user profiles, training of the new users, and also dealing with issues relating to change management. In some ports, we had to obviously upgrade the actual network. In some ports, we had to put backup power to be able to ensure that the system works optimally. So we envisage that by the end of the current financial year, we would have completed all the 72 ports and ensuring that the BMCS is all in all the 72 ports. In the new financial year, Chair, in the current one, we are dealing with 38 ports that are remaining. So we have listed all of them that are there. I think there are some that we are trying to install new infrastructure, for example, Mossel Bay and the port of Nuka, but in the other areas, we will be upgrading what we already have on the ground. As you would recall, Chair, some of the ports are in far-flung areas of our country. So some challenges relating to technology, networks, connectivity, obviously, does exist, but we are mitigating those with the installation of the proper equipment that will ensure that we deal with that. So we're spending the first two quarters of the financial year ensuring that we finalize those upgrades. So some of the challenges, obviously, that we were encountering is inadequate network bandwidth in the ports. Particularly in the previous financial year, we have had some delays with some of the ports that needed to be upgraded. For an example, in Kosi Bay, there were issues that we had to end up getting one of the telcos to be able to help us to install a connectivity there. In Sanipas, we had to move a satellite to be able to connect Sanipas, because that's one of the borders that there were connectivity issues. So what we are intending to do is that DG is going to be actually corresponding with the CETA executives to ensure that in the current financial year, we do not have that particular challenge. They have our rollout plan in terms of how we intend to roll out these ports in this financial year. But we had indicated that if we get into the second quarter when we complete the network upgrade, when we intend to complete the network upgrade by the end of second quarter, that their processes are not completed, we are on standby to ensure that there's a deviation process for us to get assistance directly from telecommunication companies. There is a negative impact of load shedding on the rollout in some of the areas due to lack of backup power. So we are working with the Border Management Authority and the Immigration Services to ensure that we install alternative power generation in those ports to ensure that there's business continuity. Change management, as I've indicated, that the reason why we did not roll out 100% full was to ensure that users get familiar with the utilization of the system. So, and the training is continuous to ensure that we do not have users not utilizing the system because of fear of making errors. So that is what is continuing. Also, insufficient capacity of staff at some ports. So we are working with the business, with the Border Management Authority, to develop a capacitation business that will be submitted to National Treasury so that we can fund us. So in a nutshell, that's where we are with the BMCS. We'll be reporting, obviously, to the committee chairperson on a quarterly basis, as our APP does provide for those the quarterly targets that are relating to BMCS. Now, Chair, on the second part of the presentation deals then with the automated biometric identification system, which is our ABIS. Chair, I thought we should just give a reminder or background to the committee that after the letter that we received on the 30th of March 2020 from EOH indicating their intention to exit this contract when they were actually exiting all public sector contracts. We then had to have a discussion in terms of how do we then ensure that the project is saved in the absence of the primary contractor. In their letter, they had recommended that their technology partner, which was ADEMA, should actually be considered for ceding the contract to them. So we then entered into, after much deliberation, actually after a number of presentations which we brought to the committee with the options that we could go for, we entered into an amended master turnkey solution agreement with ADEMA, because basically in this master turnkey solution, the expectation is that ADEMA will develop, will install, will just give us a key to turn the key and run the system. So we entered into this with all the conditions and scope of the project as per the initial tender on the 31st of March 2021. After that, there was a one-month handover process that took place between EOH and ADEMA to ensure that, again, we were trying to prevent a situation where ADEMA would say that we don't have visibility of some of the issues that EOH was dealing with. So there was that handover process for a month, and we also commenced with the developing of a few tasks, which was like project scoping and planning, establishment of project structures and work streams, and also ensuring a proper onboarding of technical resources. So the project execution under ADEMIA now officially commenced on the 1st of May 2021. For completion of phase one, it was estimated that the phase one will need a period of 7 months, so that by November 2021, phase one would have been completed. Phase one would have included what we currently enjoy with HANIS, where it's the fingerprint, they will have a photo, and then it will have facial recognition and latent search. So in that also, IDMA was going to utilize all the hardware and software procured by EOH with the responsibility of enhancing some of the areas as the report, because prior to IDMA taking over the contract, there was a technical assessment or audit that was conducted to ensure that where were the gaps, so that by the time we contract with them, those gaps would have been identified so that they know that they mitigate those particular gaps. So that's what transpired, Chairperson, when we started. So again, ADEMIA undertook that they will deliver the ABIS project that was seeded on footstool by EOH in accordance with the following deliverables and the timeline that stated in the Master Service Agreement. Phase one was 1st of May to December, or to end of November, was to on completion of phase one, the ABIS should be functional and fully operational with all functionalities currently enjoyed by DHA under HANIS as detailed in the tender. Additional features and capabilities to perform facial recognition and latent search will also be supposed to be available, and that all the data previously stored on HANIS to be migrated to ABIS in its totality and in a usable form, with no duplication of data, no compromise on the integrity of that data, and that at the completion of phase one, the provision of maintenance and support will commence in respect to phase one deliverables. So all those activities then commenced in May 2021. So, Chair, as I've indicated in the block one talks to phase one, block two talks to deliverables, which I've already explained in the previous slide. I think then under the period under the contract, as I've said, that they started on the 1st of May up to November with an additional 1 month grace period should they not complete. We then received a request for an extension for a go-live date, which now was no longer going to be November, to 28 February. That was the first, and I'll explain the reasons in the next coming slide. A second extension was also requested with the go-live now shifting to the 31st of March, the third one, April, the fourth one, it was 20th of June. And then the fifth extension took us now to November last year, which was introducing the new approach, which is a staggered approach to say that let's split phase one into two and go-live with phase one A, phase one B. And I'll explain again what that entailed. So the reason for the November 2021 extension was that the request was in line with the 1 month grace period, but obviously the period exceeded the 1 month because it was 2 months. At that time, the stage two testing was not completed, and also all data was not migrated when the extension was requested. So there's a request letter reference that ADEMIA gave to. Then the second one was that ADEMIA and the department were unable of it to conclude stage three testing of the system during the month of December. Again, ADEMIA indicated that we had not tested successfully stage two of the system. This is to ensure that all the functionality and connectivity are tested. So they were divided in various stages. So in December, only connectivity and functionalities were tested, but the end-to-end testing in particular for live capture was not finalized at the time. So basically what we wanted to ensure is that is the ADEMIA database or the ABIS database communicating effectively with live capture so that you can be able to sign that off. And also the data migrated from HANIS was at 97%, but the databases were not synchronized. Then in February, there was another correspondence between the department, three correspondence between the departments, we are referring to that in the letter, in the presentation again, where the commercial online verification, what we have separated now within ABIS, not like on HANIS, that the commercial verification or component of the system is separate from the online verification base, because with the commercial one, we want to obviously ensure that the commercial partners like banks and the insurance industry and others, you're then able to identify their transactions and be able to also bill them, you know, differently from the online verification that we offer to public institutions. Again, there were activities that were incomplete, which obviously led us not to be able to go live as per again those extensions. So we got to the 20th of June when we were supposed then to go live. There were again several delays in terms of some of the activities, with some of the omissions on the end-to-end testing on the live capture interface. Also, at the time when they wanted to go live, we then learned that the work on facial recognition and latent search was not completed, and also that the data was still not 100%. So we then, there was a deferral of then the go live, because there were concerns that we'll be going live with something that will not be effective in production. This is when now the staggered approach to go live was introduced, and the plan for each release was drafted, which included, among others, the gap analysis and performance of end-to-end testing, particularly on live capture. So fast forward to the 21st of November, sorry, because the planned date for phase 1A was 22nd of November, but we were able to go live with that on the 21st. So that was released into production, and then ABIS was now a primary system for live capture, and some of the banks that we rerouted while HANIS remained also in production as the primary for image capture, and also the National Immigration Information System for refugees and asylum seekers, and other banks and entities of government were not migrated to ABIS. So what we're trying to do was to ensure that we don't take all the clients and all the interfaces to ABIS until we have it. But the most primary one for us was live capture, that let's put live capture on ABIS, because this is what we want to do. The image capture is basically the back office process where people who apply for passports or ID documents from the missions, they still utilize the manual system. So those cards, they get it to the bank office, they get captured. Or offices that are not modernized, so those manual documents, they get scanned there, so that those fingerprints are going to what we call the database. So it was just to explain that. Then as we were now transacting with ABIS from November 21st, December and January, February, we started to pick up some of the challenges, which was applications that were stuck on the system. There were also some misalignments of registered fingerprints between ABIS and HANIS. So we tried to resolve that particular issue to ensure that those stuck applications, so there were some of them, we resolved them, you know, through a workaround manually. So that clients can, but clients waited longer than they're supposed to wait to get there. And in the process, we had levied the penalties to ADEMIA for the delay of starting phase two, because Chair and members, as you have indicated, the phase one was supposed to be completed during the financial year 2021-2022, but it had to go into the 2022-2023 financial year, meaning that phase two was therefore delayed. So therefore, in line with the contract. So that's where we levied those penalties. So then fast track to March this year, where we were still dealing with those stack applications, the team was continuing to develop the phase 1B, which is now the facial recognition and latent search, which in June they could not, was not ready. At this point, we're advised now that the team is ready. 17 March was the date to release it into production. In other words, complete now phase one and ensure that we start phase two in the new financial year. On that day when the system was supposed to be released, there were technical issues on the ABIS database, where the database was not available for 15 hours. So on the Saturday, we then took a decision that we could not continue, even though the system was back, but there were challenges in terms of operational issues like stack applications that were being experienced, you know, in the past 4 months. So we then decided that we'll switch back to harness all the linkages, and then we asked Ademia to resolve this particular matter of stack applications and ensure that when we bring the system back into production, we know that we are bringing something that is now has no errors. So because we could not have a trial and error situation. So in the letter that they wrote to us in April, then they have accepted full responsibility for the failure of their system on the 17th, which led to a decision to switch back to HANIS as a primary database for all our transactions. And then Ademia also confirmed that the ABIS database index has been fixed and corrected, and that they are ready to switch back to primary database. So what we have requested first is that let's first fix the issue of the stack applications and provide evidence that all the transactions and errors are resolved. We're still working on that. So we've now agreed that this coming weekend, between the, Friday the 12th and the once or we at the close of business, and up to Sunday the 14th, we will then switch into ABIS, test whether those databases has been fixed and corrected, and that we are now having proof that there are not going to be transaction errors, because we are currently sitting with about 313 stack applications that we can only be fixed if we switch over back to ABIS, because when they were captured on live capture, they were pointed towards ABIS, not towards HANIS, so you can't resolve them with HANIS. We also held a meeting with them and where we agreed that those technical teams must review the issue of the stack application. Hence now the technical teams have come back and said, we are now ready for this coming weekend to be able to do that. So once we then that process is completed, we can then make a decision whether we now move back to ABIS as the primary. In the process, we have levied the penalties on the delays caused by Ademia, and we've also withheld the payment as part of the penalties, even though they are disputing the amount of that we are actually levying them against them, which in turn we are, so that process is being dealt with in terms of our informal dispute resolution that is provided for in the agreement. And also, they have made their own settlement proposals, which we have rejected, and we have asked them to improve the settlement offer of the penalties. So we have still not commenced with the phase two. It will only commence once this weekend results are positive. Then we have identified the date of 19 May, where we can then commence with phase two. But in the process, there are also ongoing discussions between the executives of both the DHA and Ademia to try and resolve this matter. Chair, that then concludes my presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mavuso, for the presentations. Members, this is the presentation that we ought to interact with. And I'm sure that DTG Mavuso, you are aware that we are following up on this matter. In the last committee meeting, you did give a picture on the status. And I think the committee has always been concerned on the work of the department around that area. So we going through the report, I could identify that there are no positive output that you can demonstrate in relation to the services that our people have to receive from the department around that area. And I think you'll labor in your responses. The second matter, which I think I must upfront deal with, which I think you must prepare to labor on. I think your reasoning, or the reasons given by IDEMIA, your extensions, you need to give background details. What exactly are the weaknesses around this IDEMIA? We have moved from that transition of the EOH, and we got the reasons in terms of how you have taken a decision as a department to appoint this IDEMIA. But now the reasons that have been given, what is exactly weaknesses that the department has identified? For example, if you ought to meet with them this weekend to test their capacity to move forward, if that capacity is not tested, what are the measures that you're going to take as a department? I'm just picking up those some of the issues, Minister, because this report, we've been dealing with this area of IT network infrastructure since 2019. And I recall at the time DDG Mavuso was acting DG, he came and present with CETA. The committee had to turn them back because there was no sufficient demonstration in terms of the work and the plan that must intake in a department. So we're dealing with the matter that we've been raising with the department that directly affects our people. So you need to give more details around that. I'm going to invite members to comment and questions on the issues. Honorable Mulegwa, Honorable Pile, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Tejana, Honorable Ross, Honorable Bongani Bongo, Honorable Mudiste. You will advise me, Honorable Mr. Matunzi, if members, other members have joined, Honorable Khwase and Honorable Dito. In that order, Honorable Mulegwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also appreciate the presentation as presented by the department. Chairperson, I think this matter of abuse has been going on for a long time, and the system was supposed to be up and running at this time. But because of the dispute after the dispute, this has been delaying the progress on this matter. So, Chairperson, can the department give us an assurance that this matter will be amicably resolved? And when does the department anticipate that this matter will be resolved? And when can the project be completed so that the ABS can be up and running as we anticipated as a department? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Mulegwa. Honorable Pile.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to all colleagues and all of the officials and everyone that's present. Chair, you know, I'm just very concerned that what we've received is supposed to be progress and updates. But if you look at all of what we've heard this morning, there is so many challenges in terms of completion of this project. And I think the very important thing, which you've already highlighted, and we've even mentioned it earlier, is that we are having endless CETA is our biggest challenge. So I just can't understand why is the department waiting until September for them to look at alternatives in terms of CETA. And I think that we have to actually move with speed, Chair. In fact, even if you can put timelines, because that is affecting not just this particular program, but it's affecting all of DHA offices. It's affecting all our work. And I think we have to be able to have a solution as soon as possible. I also want to find out whether the system, when it's up and running, will be able to link across all the points of ports of entry. And the reason I'm asking this is because if for some reason someone enters at one entry point and they don't get in, whether that red flags, and if they try entering through another port, whether they will be able to pick up, but also be able to link across all of the ports of entry to say that, you know, this person is trying to go through different entry points. I must also say that I've noticed that there's already been like at least 4 extensions. Perhaps if they could tell us what is the duration of this contract, and do they even intend to continue with the same IDMIA? You know, it's a challenge that they've already, the system that they were trying couldn't work. We went back to Harness. That was a failed system. Now, I think it's important for us to identify whether there is a need to even continue. So what is that duration? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Honorable Kanyile. Honorable Tejana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and check on the presentation from the department. However, I also have just a few questions on the presentation that is before us. Firstly, I think I also have a suggestion before the questions that I want to raise, Chairperson. I think this matter should now come to the portfolio maybe every quarter so that we can be able to monitor it closely. Because we all know that majority of the failures of the department, it is due to the system failure. And in each and every office that you will go to conduct an oversight, before anything else that is reported to us, we are told that they are losing lots and lots of hours due to the system that is always offline. So I do believe that we need to keep a very close eye on this matter. And the only way to do that is if we have this matter coming to the portfolio committee more constantly so that we can be able to also check if there's any progress that is being made. Over and above to the HPSM, I would also like to know the reasons why the department keeps on giving the IDMIA these extensions. I only noted on the presentation that they've been given now recently an extension of more than a year, but I just heard also Honorable Pillay referring to about 4 extensions. So we'd like to know what is the reason the department keeps on granting IDMIA these extensions. And when the DDG was making a presentation, somewhere he indicated that they are on standby to directly contact service providers so that they can be able to get the service directly from the service provider. I just want to know that if they decide to go on that route, how long is this process going to take? Will they need to go on a tender, or is just them sending an email and then it is activated? I'm not sure how that is going to work. And if they are on standby, when are they going to activate this action? Chairperson, I also have another question. Okay, the last question that I have is, which service provider is responsible for the rollout of the BMCS, and if they are also being monitored for deadlines and progress? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kanyile. Honorable Tejana.
Good morning, Chair and members, Minister, Deputy Minister, and all the colleagues. Now, Chair, as I was listening to the presentation, which I appreciate, I was waiting for, I think like almost all of us, waiting for a confirmation date of when I was going live on both BMS and the other one that we discussed as the last one. So I could not get that. So it means that we are still dealing with a bigger problem than the department anticipates. So it's a worrisome situation, Chair, that if you are saying, because I did not serve in this committee, so from what you are said earlier, it looks like we might not go live yet because of the challenges that are being presented to us by the department. I don't know, Chair, if I heard them correctly. The transition between EOH and IDEMIA. I want to be made to be given more clarity. How did you get IDEMIA? Because I don't want to ask. Because of network, I could not get properly how we got IDEMIA. But Mr. Mavuso, when he was presenting, he said something that EOH took a decision to withdraw from all public sector contracts. But I don't get exactly how did you get academia? There's something that he might have said that I could not get or make out of the presentation because of a network. There's different categories of these ports. There are ports which they've indicated themselves that these ones are found in rural areas, if I may put it like that. There are other ones that obviously, like Ouar Kambo and others, which there wouldn't be a problem of network in respect to that. And the presentation says to us, no, we are making alternatives in an event where the areas that are continue to be in the status that we're in now. That is also something that I need further detail on. We are currently facing load shedding. And in some areas, when it's load shedding, it affects the network. We need more clarity. What are we talking about if we are referring to that? CETA's inabilities, I think they are known to many of us. In respect to the service that they are supposed to be providing to different departments, including the one that we are sitting with. So I think if there's whatever they are waiting for, the September that they are waiting for to take action, the department might need to immediately take action now, because I do not see CETA having or able to resolve the problems that they have now, because they have been unable to resolve them in the current offices. Not necessarily the ones that are dealing with BMIS and all of that, but in ones where CETA is providing a service, there have been challenges, and they are huge challenges. They're impacting on the daily operating of the department. So we know where our challenges with CETA. And if there is alternatives, as Mr. Mavuso is putting it, we don't need to wait. Thirdly or fourthly, Chair, Mr. Mavuso says that IDEMIA has been submitting claims and there have been disputes in terms of those payments. I don't know. It looks like the IDEMIA thinks that government is a cash collecting space, and if there is no proper clarity in terms of their contractual agreement with the department, we are going to find them people coming to claim things that do not exist. You can't, in the middle of a contract, if it's a contract, have someone who comes and say no, we have agreed on this amount and you have not paid this amount and all of that. They can't be those kind of things. There has to be strict understanding of the contract that is entered into between the department and IDEMIA. Because if IDEMIA might do what the EOH has done, pull out after having paid them a lot of or invested a lot of resources to them, what then happens after that? What then happens to the people that are waiting for this system to go live? So it's those issues there, Chair, that I wanted to speak to. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Tejana. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to Mr. Mavuso. The ABUS project was launched in 2015, and to my understanding, it was supposed to be completed within 12 months. I just want to understand if this is correct or if I've got it wrong, if that can be clarified. because we are here 8 years later. So I just want to, again, just get a confirmation. What was the original cost and time frame of this project? And what has been the cost to date, including the cost needed to continue running the obsolete harness system? My next question is, when did the Department of Home Affairs learn about load shedding? We've had it in various forms since 2007, and we still have no backup power at our ports of entry. And I imagine then when the power goes down, then systems go offline, etc. I'm just trying to understand how this is possible and how planning never took place in all these years to ensure that we have uninterrupted power supply at our borders. So I want to understand, how did this happen? And what is the time frame for getting power backups, adequate power backups at all our border posts? Then it was Albert Einstein that defined insanity as doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. So IDEMIA was biometrics subcontracted to EOH. EOH went over budget and over time. And then somehow the Department of Home Affairs allowed the contract to be ceded to the very people that were not performing, the actual biometric subcontractor. So we shouldn't really be surprised here if we sit in a similar situation to what we had with EOH, a similar type of delays. But we should be very worried. I can see from various presentations, Home Affairs wants to get out from under CETA and go it alone. So even blaming CETA for issues that are clearly their fault. But my question to Mr. Mavusa is, does Home Affairs have the expertise to procure and project manage enterprise level ICT projects? Because time after time after time, these projects fail in various forms, in various measures across different departments. It's an absolute consistency. There's a consistent lack of performance in these projects, inability to identify project risks and intervene timeously. I heard the words, we discovered after a while that such and such was happening. So I want to understand, what kind of expertise does Home Affairs have? I know as a committee, we were complaining for the longest of times for a CIO. I'd like to get an understanding, Home Affairs is saying they want to get out from under CETA, but what expertise do they have that they think they can do better than CETA? And then, Chairperson, I want to get onto the matter of whether our personal data at Home Affairs is safe. Safe from hackers? Is our biometric data safe? I know from our various calls that we get from members of the public every day, physical documents are often lost. Applications disappear in the system, just completely disappear, and somehow are untraceable. It's not that the application that disappeared cannot be recovered, it just disappears. So have you conducted a threat assessment, a cybersecurity assessment at the Department of Home Affairs? Because you want to be a security department, but I don't see that the department is getting on board the necessary expertise in terms of manpower. I don't see a threat assessment, a consistent plan with biometric systems, with NPR systems, where we can see that Home Affairs is taking control of the situation. We still have obsolete systems in our permitting, which allows for corruption and fraud to happen in that department. So what are you doing to position yourself against cybersecurity attacks, against threats to all of our personal data that you hold? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ross. Honourable Ngane Bongo.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning. I think I'll support the department when they say they want to deal with this thing outside CETA. Well, since you started the term, you must have seen how CETA has been delaying a lot of things that look like progress in the department. But Just like Rose, I think I want to know about how much have we spent already on this project, because when we started the term, we were sitting with this problem. And we thought that we were salvaging and saving the project. And we thought the subcontractor who was doing the job will do it, but I'm very disappointed with the report today. Because now it's like this idea is being massaged. In terms of the contract, I don't know, I want to know what does the contract say? Can you really postpone four times? And nothing is being done. Because if you postpone four times, and now we're relying on this coming weekend, what if nothing happens this weekend? But again, the report says, the presentation says, money payments have been withheld. So withholding the payments, obviously that will stall the project even more. Because if there's no money that they're getting, and there are also penalties on them, it will be a bit difficult for them to perform this task. I think what I'm interested in now, Mr. Mavuso and DG, is what next? What next? Because clearly from the representation, these people can't perform. These people will not be able to pull this work. They initially said they can do the work within 7 months. That was phase one. Then you get to phase two. So now it's duck and diving. Phase one, now is phase one A, phase one B. I think it's unacceptable. Now you're staggering all these things. It's like, I don't know, we can't go on this way. With due respect, we can't go on this way. They're not done with phase two. That's phase one A. They want to stagger now and go towards and start with phase two. Because phase two is dependent on what must be obtained in phase one. I'm not aware of phase 1B. What is that? It's like they want to confuse us and confuse the department in terms of what they want to, how they want to do the project. If I was sitting in the department side, like Honorable Tejani said, I'm working for it, I would have cancelled this agreement and start afresh with people who understand the work. From where I'm sitting, IDM does not understand what must be done with all this postponement, and we still massage them, postpone. They say, and they have a luxury of requesting all these extensions, and we still agree. What does the contract say? Because if you request the first extension of 1 month, you must be sure we are going to do it. The next thing is an extension of over 3 months. The next extension, it can't work that way. It can't. Something is terribly wrong. And an action must be taken. There must be consequences for all these things. And if they're not getting money, then they will also have more reason not to do the work. Or they will now run away like your age. And I agree with Kanyile that maybe on a monthly basis, the committee must be favored with report on what is happening. Because from where I'm sitting, even this weekend, we won't go live. They promise how many times we'll go live. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And there are no consequences except that the consequences that will cause them to fail even more. So already I think we should be preparing what is the next move? What must happen with the project for it to be successful? I think I'll stop there, Chair, for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Bongo. Honorable Modisimta.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think members have captured issues there quite well. It is indeed a disappointing report that we're receiving. There is no progress and any movement whatsoever. My main concern is the costs that the department keeps on incurring with these delays and postponements. And I would like the department to share with us or indicate really what are the cost implications that they have this project since it is not coming into completion or it's not yielding any results. We really need those numbers. It's very important that we know and understand what are the costs or what is the department suffering from these delays, so that we may be able to monitor and move towards a position where a decision must be taken on what should happen with this contract. It is really not assisting, and unfortunately, it is costing us on savings delivery, and as a result, the people on the ground are the ones who are suffering. Normally, we would have received earlier in the year reports on the department with regards to the network, and I must say that that presentation looked so shiny and gloomy, but on the ground, it is not what is happening. It's a total different story, it's a total different thing. So we really need to move to a point where a decision must be taken. We cannot accept such presentations or updates where we are being told about delays and delays and more postponement. I will agree with the request from the department that we must give them time and space because they are going to do a final testing or something. They've mentioned something about the tests that are coming in the near week or so. We would then request to get their report as soon as possible so that we can then have a determination on whether there is progress or there is light with regards to this project. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, members, for your contributions. We'll start with the DG Mavoso, DG, DM, and the minister will make final comments on the matter. DG Mavoso?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I think in terms of the question that you raised on the weaknesses that we have identified, you know, by June last year, when we realized that we could not go live on the 20th, so we then said to them, look, we can't keep on making all these extensions. So that is why we then had to sit down with them and do proper gap analysis and come up with that particular staggered approach, because we could realize that some of the areas were not quite clear on their side. So that's one of the issues that we had to deal with to try and that's what brought us to that phase 1A to be able to go live on the 21st of November with that interface with live capture and also a verification with the banks. Then on the network issues for BMCS on CETA, so I must indicate that the reason why we are saying that we will definitely go a different option if we are not getting successful with CETA in terms of upgrading those ports of entry. There's a team that is currently obviously doing assessment that will give us to say these ports, this is a challenge, this port. So we're expecting that work to be completed in the next coming week or so. Then, Honorable Mulekwa, you're quite correct that this matter has been delaying for some time. So I think one of the things that we're going to seek, it's a legal opinion on the matter. We have been talking, obviously, to the lawyers on the matter. So we'll come back and advise the committee once we have also briefed the minister from our side, the department. Honorable Pillay, yes, as I said, in the same way, we will definitely, I think, bring the issues forward rather than waiting for September on the issue of CETA upgrading the ports of entry. So that's one of the issues. And BMCS definitely is linked. If you enter at OR Tambo, you exit at the Pipe Bridge, it links the entire information. So it's one database that we're able to view all the travel information. So that one is not an issue, it's definitely linked. On the issue of the extensions with ADEM, the four extensions that you are making a reference to, it was basically agreeing to the fact that when someone says, we are almost at the tail end, here's the information that we need so that we can be able to go live on a particular date. We did not want to not to give them adequate time and say we are abandoning the project. So that is why we allowed those extensions so that we can be able to accommodate and get the systems finalized. And I note what Honorable Kanyile said on the issue of coming to the portfolio committee. And I think I've raised the issue, I've answered the issue of the extensions. The BMCS is being developed together with SARS service providers proceeded during the contract. So that's basically the people who are helping us with the development of BMCS. It has been completed. It's a question of rolling out now. Honorable Chetana, the issue of dates for go live, BMCS is live. It's now just to ensure that we roll it out in all the ports. So that part has been completed. System is working, has been developed. So Honorable Chetana, that one is one. With the one of the ABs, as I said, we went live on the 21st, but it was just one component. So the bigger issue now is what we need to resolve when the system went off on the 17th, whether are we then able to confirm that all the errors that they said they are clearing have been cleared. We are going to be confirming that this coming Saturday, and then we will then be able to take a decision whether we can change ABIS into a primary system. So a bit of history on the transition for EOH. When EOH tendered for this work, they came with a technology partner. Like many of the companies, they came with a technology partner being ADEMIA. So they were utilizing what is the core ADEMIA solution that ADEMIA was going to implement. So when they were exiting the public sector contract, their recommendation was that you can actually consider ceding this to ADEMIA. And the reason that informed that is that we already had the hardware and software which you already paid for. Now, if we were to go and say, look, let's abandon and not implement the ABIS solution that we had, it would have meant that by that time we're supposed to write off all the amount that was paid for the software, which was to the tune of about 100 million. So hence, we then agreed that the contracts would be ceded to ADEMIA to complete what they had started together with EOH, because they were there from day one when the project started. And then on the issue of ports of entry being located in rural areas and the connectivity issues, the good thing about BMCS is that it has an offline mode. So you can be able to operate the BMCS on the offline mode, and then obviously the database, they replicate once you are online. And then the penalty claims, as we have indicated, we have still, we are in the discussion to resolve the penalty claims in that regard. Honorable Ross, the project did not start, well, the conceptualization of the project started in 2015, but the actual kickoff of the ABIS project, it was in December 2017. So with the completion of 12 months, so meaning that the first phase was supposed to be completed by December 2018. So this is where we are now in relation to all the challenges that we had with EOH, which we have previously briefed the committee about. And then the issue of load shedding. Honorable Ross, the ports of entry where there's customs, remember our EMCS is running on the SARS network. So where there's the customs in that particular port of entry, we don't have the issue of power challenges, because we piggyback on the power that SARS provide for their systems. The challenge we have is in ports where there's no customs. Then we have to rely on public works to provide infrastructure for those ports. For an example, we've got a port located inside the Kruger National Park called Kiriondo. In Kiriondo, we don't have even power backup there, because it's a port that opens obviously only during the day. So we rely on electricity, But there are other ports of entry that also are in the similar situation where it's electricity and our own backup power. But we are saying that the backup power that was there was not adequate for us to keep BMCS running 24/7 in case power goes out for longer. Hence, we are saying that in our discussion with BMA is to ensure that those ports get proper backup power. On the issue of protection of personal, of the information, definitely the information is protected because we conduct regular vulnerability and penetration testing on our system. Yes, cybersecurity is the reality, but I think some of the issues relating to or some of the security mechanisms, I'm not sure whether, Chair, it will be advisable to talk about them in this public platform, but I can assure you that our data, as far as we are concerned, is safe in this regard. But as I said, it would be difficult to explain all the nitty-gritties in this platform. Maybe in terms of how much we spend, Honorable Bong, I'll leave that to DG. And on the issue of what's next, again, I would leave that to DG to be able to deal with it. But the contracts, insofar as extensions are concerned, It only allowed the grace period of 1 month to complete the phase one. So that's one of the issues that when we then sought, because we contacted our lawyers and sat down with them to say, look, what do we do in this regard? The question was, give them the time to be able to complete that. Then obviously at some point we'll have to evaluate where we are in this regard and make an appropriate decision. So Chair, I will then stop here and hand over to the DG. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, DDG Mavuso. DG Makode.
No, thank you so much, Chairperson and honorable members for the questions. I suppose linked to what DDG Mavuso was saying with regards to the port of entry, you'll recall that we came to the committee and the BMA was present as well, and they've indicated that the bulk of those contracts are now under their purview with regards to facility management, and the BMA commissioner can add more with regards to how they're dealing with some of those issues. So Honorable Bongo and Honorable was asked how much we've paid to date. So we have paid to date an amount of 14,179,014 rands. So that's what we've paid to date out of the contract value of about 65,389,000. And you'll recall that the total contract value was 477,405 when it was signed with UH. So this is the amount that I'm referring to, the contract value only with IDEMIA, which amounts to 65. And then to date, we've paid that 14 million. And I don't think maybe on this platform we need to indicate what are the penalties that we are withholding or the payments that we are withholding with regards to IDEMIA. But there's payments that we believe that where we've not derived value, as the honorable members have indicated, we therefore should not be paying the amounts. I think Honorable Bongo or Advocate Bongo also asked the question as to what's next. And I think maybe I'll appeal to the committee to allow the weekend activities to be undertaken. And I think post the weekend, we can therefore make an assessment, look at the progress or lack thereof. And I think we can come back to the committee and be able to brief the committee with regards to what is it that we are doing with regards to that area. And the last one will probably be on the work that we are doing as well, Honorable Rose, with the CSIR that will be reported back to us later today. In particular, on the work streams, there are 6 work streams, and one of them includes cyber security, where we're looking at issues around threats, investigations, and so on and so forth. And this is work that's ongoing because it's a matter that we believe we need to be alert to, but also we need to be taking proactive measures in order to counter the activities around cyber security. We do have measures in place to protect personal records. That's currently what's happening in the department. So thank you so much, honorable members. Let me pause here for now.
Thank you, DG. Deputy Minister?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think just a few points around, firstly, our intentions. That our intentions throughout this project has mainly been to save the project with an understanding that APIS is a cornerstone for the future of our IT infrastructure, and it really takes precedence for us. So that has been our attitude, and our steps and our approach has been mainly informed by that. Save the project so that we can be able to get our future IT infrastructure in order. Well, the extensions as well have been granted in that particular spirit of saving that particular project. And I must say, Honorable Tejana, that our approach has not been to pay for services where we have not derived value. And we are imposing penalties where necessary. I think that has been made very clear that we must make sure that we derive value for money out of this so that we do not encounter expenditure where we have not actually really derived any value. Honorable Ross, I will not say, you know, harness is absolute because it's absolute because, yes, our intention is to improve, but that does not mean that harness is not working in the manner that it was designed for it to work. Yes, there is a need for us to improve. That's why we are embarking on APIS, but we place complete reliance on harness, and that is why we have not suffered mainly in terms of our IT systems. And Mr. Mavuso is quite correct. In as much as we cannot detail our security plans and our security infrastructure when it comes to safeguarding data, but we have not had serious problems when it comes to that particular area. We have maintained quite good standards. I think that the approach that we are taking as a department is that, yes, let's give time over the weekend to see if we are able to go live and then be able to come back to the committee and make the presentations. We have no intention whatsoever to massage anyone here. We want to make sure that services are delivered and they will take action within legislation, within the powers that we have in order to make sure that we move forward. Let me pause there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Minister, if there's any other matter.
Thank you very much, Chair. Once more, I need to apologize. I struggled for 20 minutes to log in. I have to drive somewhere else in town to look for a different venue, and that's how I got connected. But be that as it may, thank you very much for waiting for me. I caught all the presentation at the tail end, but I had the question. Honorable members, I want to accept upfront that the situation we're faced with is completely unacceptable, even to us. It is very, very unacceptable, extremely frustrating, and we are despondent about this matter. But we are sitting between the rock and a hard place. We are sitting between the devil and the deep dark sea, as they always say, on this matter. Honorable members may remember that when EOH pulled out of all the government contracts, that included the contract with Home Affairs, there was a debate which we once even brought to this committee about why, and the committee did ask us why we are choosing IDEMIA. We were trying to be pragmatic because of the position in which we were. If we were to start again in terms of the law, it meant going back to CETA, because any IT program you get engaged in, the law insists that you must go through CETA. We're going to go through CETA, start all over again. Now, we had just finished the mess with EOH, which was also procured by CETA, with all the problems you know, because the forensic report was brought to you, and you saw step by step exactly what happened. So we thought that is not the best route to choose. Let us deal with the devil we know, which was IDEMIA, who was already there. In other words, we took a leap of faith and say, let's go on with this one rather than starting from the beginning. But now, unfortunately, things have turned the way we did not anticipate, honorable members. And that's why I'm saying we sort of are despondent, because it's true, we are the ones who chose IDEMIA as a better alternative than going to start all over again with CETA. Now we have to decide, do we start all over again from the beginning after so many years? That is the decision we need to take, maybe during the weekend. Honorable members, I also want to emphasize what the DM said in the answer to Honorable Ruos, saying we've got an obsolete system called HANIS. HANIS is a very good system. It has never disappointed us, as the DM has already said. We were not moving from it because it's obsolete or it's causing problems. We were trying to advance. In the IT world, you always try to advance, but unfortunately, you have to take the blows as they come, because things in IT, from my little experience, do not always go the way the experts tell you. You know, the people who are experts in IT, things do not always go the way that they promise you. Every time you meet obstacles, ever since I was in the state, I don't remember where we procure IT and it goes smoothly. Sometimes it gets stuck, and other times things don't go the way they've told you, etc., etc. But HANIS is still serving us very well. That's why when there's a problem, we run back to it. It never gives problems. The reason we went to ABIS is because we wanted to be ahead of the thugs who are corrupting department by adding more biometrics, because HANIS has got only two, your fingerprint and your photo. We're trying to add, as you remember, iris recognition, facial recognition, etc., etc. So that's why we went to ABIS. And really, we are really hoping that when we meet over the weekend, it will give us a way forward. The disputes, Honorable Tejani, with the payment disputes with IDEMIA are not really payment disputes in terms of the contract. It's because IDEMIA doesn't accept penalties, because we hold back payments. If you are supposed to pay them a certain amount of money, we hold back part of it as part of these penalties, because once you pay them, you'll never be able to get it back. So we are trying to hold back and say, no, you have not solved this and that in this manner. So we are holding back a certain amount. That's when then they put a dispute, because no company wants to be penalized. But we are doing so, Chairperson, because one of the biggest criticism of the state is on the issues of contract management. I'm talking about the whole state, contract management, how to manage contracts with contractors, with service providers. In quite a number of cases, service providers are left to go away with murder, with no penalties. And we have decided in Home Affairs that there is no way that we won't levy penalties. Now, that put us in a very difficult position, Honorable Advocate Bongo, of whether if we withhold payments, the company won't be able to deliver. But we are of the belief that the only way to push a company to work hard is sometimes to hit them where it hurts the most, on the financial side, because these are people who are in business. Their business is money. And if you hold back the money, of course, their business suffer. But we are also doing it, Honorable Advocate Bongo, because we believe that, and I've seen that before, that when companies serve the state, they behave different to the private sector, because the private sector is very strict when it comes to their money, because the companies we hire and the private sector are the same thing. Their business is money and no one wants to lose. So they always make sure that if they've got a contract with the private sector and a contract with the state, they pay more attention and time to the private sector one and leave the state one, because they know there'll be no consequences. And that's why we insisted that this time around, there must always be consequences. The question from Honorable Ruos, why we have not acquired power for our borders. Honorable members, I just wish to remind you, when you went to Bait Bridge and Lebombo, I think it's 2021, and came back very angry about toilets that were not cleaned, etc., we did put it to our attention that who is our host at the port of entry. Our host at the airport is AXA. They are the ones who are responsible for everything, to make sure that there is electricity, there's power,
there is water, there are clean toilets, the buildings are maintained. And AXA is doing that extremely well, you know, very excellently. We have never had to complain even once. I'm sure many of you are using the airports. You never have to complain about infrastructure at any of the airports because AXA is doing extremely, extremely well. At the seaports of entry, our host is the transport, Transnet port facility, which is also doing very well with some small hiccups here and there, but they are doing very well. The problem we're having is our host at the land port of entry, which you have witnessed yourself with the dirty toilets where they just forgot to extend the contract of a service provider or stop a service provider and not issue the contract to somebody else. We've been having those problems. Now, from the 1st of April, as you know, the Border Management Authority is a standalone entity, 3A entity, under the Public Finance Management Act, which means the Border Management Authority is going to be its own host, responsible for maintenance of infrastructure, for contracts, etc. But that money is still with Public Works. It's not yet with the Border Management Authority, the money for maintenance. It will only be transferred in October during the part appropriation period by the Minister of Finance. So at the moment, we still sort of waiting and we'll try to navigate to see exactly how we go around this space. On the problem of CETA, honorable members, remember CETA was established by an act of parliament. It's a law. We have tried many times to dodge it, seeing the failures there, especially in trying to get procure an IT infrastructure which we thought is very small. We did try to do shortcuts and do it on our own. And every time we try that, the Auditor General comes back and say, no, 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 you are not supposed to do this. At some stage, the Auditor General even said, look, we know your problems with CETA, but unfortunately, it's the law. And we apply the law when we audit you. Even if we know your problems and your reason for deviating in a particular way, we expect you to follow the law and they'll find us having irregular expenditure. So we are really forced to try and navigate within that space, which is a very, very narrow space. Now, we have been asking honorable members, as you know, even here in this committee, we did make it very clear that we want to be relieved, and some media houses were saying we say we want the divorce from CETA, etc. The Treasury then told us that, look, everybody in the JCPS cluster, that means the justice, crime prevention and security cluster, the JCPS. Everybody, Department of Justice, police, ourselves, everybody wants out of CETA because they say their systems are messed up, they are not progressing. So I understand Honorable Rio says we blame CETA even for mistakes which are committed by us. Then the question will be, if that is the case, why all the other departments are complaining about the same thing? So Treasury said we must wait until they themselves relook at this because they don't want to do it piecemeal, that tomorrow we give Home Affairs, the other department is fighting, what about us? So they want to do it as a package, but they are faced with an act of parliament, which perhaps might need, I'm just thinking, I'm not very sure, might need to be amended about this whole issue of CETA. I'm not sure whether Treasury alone, without amendment, can free us and say departments can go out on their own and no longer depend on CETA. But at the present moment, unfortunately, we do. Chairperson, we will really try our best, but I must accept, and we accept all the criticism from members. We are as frustrated as you are, because you can imagine we were going to be very proud when we switch on ABIS and it minimized corruption in our department. It minimized identity fraud. It minimizes duplicate IDs. It minimizes, passport fraud, which has caused us problems internationally. We are really looking forward, and we are equally disappointed that IDEMIA, which we regarded as an international company with experience, came to have the type of failures that they are having. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, DM, DG, and Mr. Mavuso, for the presentation, and members for having raised concerns. All of us in the committee and yourselves as a department are concerned on the work of this contract that must service our people. We are going to call you back on the 23rd of May to come and report to the committee on the action plans and the assessment you have conducted, as you have indicated, over this weekend. And the DG also raised an important matter that you are also meeting with the CSIR to get a report on the network systems, the entire department. So I'm moving from this meeting with that understanding that, Minister, the committee is not convinced, and I think yourselves also you concede, but collectively we need to get the department out of this mess so that our people are benefiting from the services that you offer as a department. So Mr. Matonsi, we're scheduling this item again on the 23rd of May. The department will come back and give a detailed plan, action plan, including the costs incurred around this issue and how the department are going to. We can't wait for September. In fact, Honorable Tejana, you're correct. And Honorable Pillay, is too far. So we need to take action and able to respond on the issues of service delivered to our people. So we're closing it in that manner that we'll come back. We'll note the presentations, note all the issues that members have raised, and we'll come back after your assessment has been made on the 23rd of May. We'll just schedule the item on the agenda if we are having the meeting on that day, Mr. Matons. Can I get a sense on that schedule, Mr. Matons?
Yes, Chairperson, we do have a meeting scheduled for that date. Except that, no, I think as I indicated earlier on, there's a debate. I can't remember which department, which is in the same cluster as us, unless if there are changes and then, we do have a meeting on the 23rd.
I'm asking, would you have a committee meeting on the 23rd?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. There is a meeting on the 23rd.
Okay. Let's schedule this item on the 23rd. I think we'll get back the report so that members, the issues that they've raised, were able to follow up on them, on this matter, so that we close up and give and get an understanding the options that they've been briefing the committee on how we must move on the item. Minister, is that an understanding that we can take?
Yeah, Chair, I just don't know whether 23rd is not very near. I personally will be leading the meeting with CSIR this afternoon at 2 o'clock. I don't know exactly what progress are they going to tell us, because we started engaging them in January and they've been on this job of a diagnostic journey and what to do and plans. So I'm not sure whether the 23rd is not very near, Chairperson. No, but we can't challenge it, but I'm just thinking that it's only in 2 weeks time, you know.
No, no, it's enough time, Minister. I just want to lobby your thinking. I see you are not comfortable. It's in enough time. We need an assessment, as you've indicated. You are meeting CSIR this afternoon. The weekend testing their test. You'll be able to give us a report on what you get so that we begin to work towards what the Honorable Kanyile has indicated in terms of quarterly report. But I think to get a sense of where you have assessed, what are the issues that are coming out? What is an action plan? I think that won't be difficult for the Home Affairs to deal with that part.
Okay. Accepted, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, members. We're standing off this item. We're now getting into the last item on the consequential amendment. Minister, you, I think the DM, we've taken a brief on that. Two issues that we raised is on the late presentations. And I think that we had agreed in the committee meeting that this presentation could have came earlier so so that members are able to consult, but also to take note on some of the issues that are arising from that report. And when members are laboring on the comments, you'll also raise some of those issues. We'll allow you to present, Minister, and then we'll get guidance on how we're going to deal with this matter and outline the process thereof. Minister?
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you once more, honorable members. I have presented to you two documents which I want the committee to consider and go through. And I will ask the first document to be put on the screen, approach to PPFA consequential amendments. And as an introduction, honorable members, just to be on the same page, you will remember that the Electoral Amendment Act has now been assented to into operation by the president. It came as a consequence of a constitutional court ruling about bringing independence into the fold of contesting national and provincial elections. Now you remember that elections are conducted.
Sorry, Minister. Who's sharing the document?
Chair, it's Smuzi.
Smuzi, can you share the document that the minister is going to start with?
Yes, Smuzi, I'm giving an introduction while you are sharing. Please share.
Is this? I'm already on the screen. I'm sharing it. Is it not clear?
It's not on the screen.
It's not on the screen. Okay.
No. Yeah.
Thank you, Minister.
Yes, there it is, honorable members. So I was still saying, before I go into it, I want to give a little bit of a background that as we were doing that act, we realized, and at the end of that act, if you remember, we wrote that there is going to be a need for a consequential amendment. And that consequential amendment, meaning we have got no choice but to amend, is of the Political Party Funding Act that was enacted in 2018, for the simple reason that when that act was enacted, the word independent in parliament and provincial legislature was not known. It never existed. Now it exists. And if the political party funding outlines how political parties are funded in order to be able to run elections and their political activities, it stands to reason that equally the independence too must be funded, because it will be illegal and unconstitutional to leave them out. But you cannot fund them without an act of parliament. And the act that exists, the Party Funding Act number 6 of 2018, does not include them. So it will become illegal. That's how the consequential amendment came. But we also know that this act was passed in 2018. It's already 4 years or so. Now, some of the issues we passed there, when we put them into operation, we start realizing that they don't work very well. And so we can't pass this opportunity without correcting what we think has been wrong. And some of them are very obvious, others are very tricky, but we are going to go through it. So we thought our approach would be this. The first document I'm going to do, which is on the screen, is about our approach. What are the overarching principles? When we start the job, we can't just be all over the place and be at random. We need to have some guiding principles. And we thought we'll put these principles to you. You will take them away. Go to your principals meaning your various caucuses, consult them to see if these principles can be applied so that when we start the work can be very smooth because we'll have agreed on principles. The first one is we are very committed to transparency in party funding and to safeguard our democracy and sovereignty by avoiding capture of parties or independent representatives by local or international donors. We believe all parties and independents should get their fair share of public funding in order to maintain relations and engagements with their constituencies. Without this, democracy cannot fulfill its purpose of ensuring that it results in properly representing the people. Maintaining a living link between public representatives and the peoples is a vital part of democracy. While international support to our democracy is welcome, it needs to be declared and monitored to safeguard our sovereignty. We need to encourage all South Africans and global supporters who value our democracy to also consider donating the multi-party democracy fund. Chairperson, we are emphasizing this because, can you go down, please, to number five? Can you go back to number five, please? Yes. We want to emphasize this fact because there is this issue of donations where people choose and donate to political parties. Some will say they don't want to donate because they don't want to be known as it's a problem, etc. We are saying, let's all of us encourage them. If they can't donate to one party because they don't want to be associated with particular policies or particular parties, let them donate to multi-party democracy fund so that the money is distributed by the IEC to the different parties so that no company or no individual can be associated with any parties they don't want to associate with. We are saying so because we want our private sector companies which can donate to know that donation cannot only be to a particular party. It can also be to the democracy project itself. And that's why we're emphasizing that principle. We want to work, the parties to work together in emphasizing this principle and encouraging the growth of the multi-democracy fund, multi-party democracy fund. Next. Yes, can you go to six? South African parties have all been affected by a decrease in donations in the last few years. Fixing the legislative environment for independent members and political party funding must help to make funding easy, fair, transparent, and democratic. We should avoid prescribing amounts in legislation and to do so in the regulations as we want to avoid unnecessary changes to the Act. Yeah, as one of the most important principles, Chairperson, we've been working on this principle in quite a number of cases. Putting a number in an act when things change, especially when the number is to do with money, inflation, economies changing, and disasters happening, you are now stuck. You don't know what to do. I'll give an example here. Honorable members may remember that in 1998, when we passed the very act that we've amended, the Electoral Law Act 73 of 1998, we put into that act that the seats in provincial legislatures will be determined at the end of March of 1999. We put 1999 because we were preparing for 1999 elections and we're not aware or it slips our minds in parliament or the executive that after 1999 there will be other elections, and yet the act says 1999. You are aware it took many years for it to be amended. Fortunately, it has now been amended. It says the IEC will determine the seats prior to each and every election, so that we removed that 1999, which was putting us in a corner. So we are also putting the same principle here, that where amounts are mentioned, numbers and figures are mentioned, we try to avoid them, we put them in regulations, because those are easy to amend, of course, with the participation of Parliament and the public, but it's easier than amending an act. Limits for reporting domestic donations. Can you move on? For number eight, please. Sorry, number one, under limits. We need to remember that the original legislation was informed by a constitutional court judgment in terms of PAIA. Voters had the right to know who funded parties. I do sometimes get the impression that this fact is sometimes forgotten, how we ended up with the Political Party Funding Act. There was a constitutional court judgment about PAIA, the issue of access to information act, that if access to information is one of the main principles of our democracy, then the voters also need to have information and know who is funding who and how much are they getting from who. And that's how this legislation came into being, that then we need to have a special act that regulates that. Currently, both parties and donors have to report all donations over 100,000, over 100,000 rand. This is cumbersome for both recipients and donors, but it is a there to guard against money laundering and spreading donations from a single source across multiple donors. While parties and independents should continue to fully account for donations over the limit that has been set, the IEC should remove any unnecessary onerous obligations that may deter donors. And IEC, we are not really saying your systems are unnecessary, but we are just saying, please look at them, because some donors complain that having to fill the form here and there is a problem. We are doing so not to encourage corruption, but we do believe, unless members think otherwise, that there are sufficient and other checks and balances to investigate suspicious donations that are declared by parties. Suspicious donations from donors who themselves might be suspicious. We think we have got FICA, we have got SARS, we have got the Reserve Bank. Sometimes there's media which picks up this thing, but we can't rely on that. But we can rely on institutions that have been set up, and Parliament itself can get information from those institutions. In other words, we are trying to advocate, if it's acceptable, that let the administrative burden on the donors not be as heavy as the administrative burden on the parties who receive the money. The parties must continue having that administrative burden because they are recipients of the money. But the person who donates that money must not find themselves in a situation where they say, why should I donate when, you know, I'm going to be chased around to fill up this and that paper. We are just putting here for it to be considered. For the 100,000 rand limit to make declarations, there is room to consider reasonable and justifiable increase of the amounts over time in a constitutional democracy. We are aware that it's already 5 years that we have declared this 100,000. And as I said, when you put figures, it becomes difficult to change. What was 100,000 5 years ago is no longer 100,000 today. I'm sure we all know that. Can we move? Hello? Limits for reporting international donations. We are aware that democracies and states are undermined across the world by international interests, and party and independent representatives or candidate funding may be used as a vehicle for this purpose. Sovereignty and public opinion are both issues that require a considered response. The limit to foreign donor funding was set at a different time and needs to be re-looked at in a reasonable and justifiable manner, consistent with our constitutional democracy. We are also saying that limit about how much money can you get from a foreign funder for capacity building was decided at a different period. It's already 5 years. What is that which we are saying now about that? The MDF as a vehicle for those who want to donate above the limit or to more than one party or independent. Can you go up? All foreign donors and large domestic donors should also be encouraged to donate to the Multi-Party Democracy Fund. I've already said so. Parties who do not want to accept donation from a specific donor to the MPDF can be excluded from benefiting from that donation. What we are trying to say on this principle, colleagues, is that honorable members, is that if a particular company may decide to donate to the Multi-Party funding and put it in that space for it to be distributed to all the parties. If there's a party that may not be happy and say, look, that money comes from so and so or from such and such a country, I don't want to receive any cents from there, that party should be allowed to choose and say, don't give me any part of that money. You can give me all the other monies, but if it's from such and such company or from such and such a country, it's not in line with the thinking of my party. They must also be allowed, but we must encourage countries and parties to donate to the multi-party democracy fund. Honorable members, remember that when the Act came into being, the thinking right from the beginning was that the fiscus must finance political activity so that all parties are free to enact their own legislation without looking over their shoulders about what funders will say and all that. That was the original aim. So if the multi-party democracy fund grows, all the better. Linking fiscal allocation to represented parties to limits. The amendment should link fiscal allocation increase or decrease to any decrease or increase in upper limits for domestic donation. This means that if the fiscus is healthy, can afford and can afford the increase. What we mean again, honorable members, here is, I'm repeating, the Act was not enacted in a vacuum. It was enacted and limits were set on the basis that our democracy must be funded by the fiscus. The money must come from the people themselves to run the democracy of this country so that we don't find ourselves in a situation where policies are compromised. But unfortunately, as you may remember, after the Act was passed, there were lots and lots of problems in terms of the growth of the economy. And Treasury was very far from funding at the level which they wanted to. So what you are proposing here is that the limits must be linked to what the fiscus can offer. If the fiscus can offer enough, like 100%, then there's no need to tamper with anything. But if they say, look, we can only give you 50% of the money that you need, we know that running an election and running activities, parties already know how much they need to spend. How are they going to cope if they only have 50% or even 25% of their needs? So they must be able to raise funds in one or the other. And that way must be regulated, but it must be re-looked at. That's what we are trying to say here. Changing the formula for allocation of funds to parties and independents in parliament. Honorable member, yeah, can you move? Yeah. Honorable members, I need to explain this very thoroughly. How is money distributed to parties in parliament? And we are saying in the light of independence not being able to compete for proportionality, as they can only occupy one seat, we propose, can you go? Yes, yes, move. Yeah, we propose that everyone who wins a seat gets 0.25% per seat, a quarter of a percentage per seat. This formula will apply to different funds referred to in the Act and administered by IEC. This will ensure that every party or independent receive their fair share according to the total of 400 seats in Parliament. It needs to be explained, honorable members, because it might not be very clear to you. At the present moment, the distribution of funds is in two sort of tranches, if I may call them that. The first tranche is whatever amount is there is distributed via two-thirds and one-third, meaning for proportional, two-thirds of the money is distributed via proportional representation. It depends on the strength of the party in parliament, and it gets a fair share of two-thirds of the total fund, right? Then the remaining one-third is equal distribution. In other words, it doesn't matter how many seats or how many members or how big you are, you get the same amount. Meaning, if you give 10 rands, a party with 1,000 members will get the same amount as a party with only one member if there's such a party. Now, that is what was happening, honorable members. Now, it will be an exaggeration to say a party has one member, but it won't be an exaggeration to say an independent is one person. So now that independents are in, can we use the same formula where one independent will get the same amount on the one third as the party? Of course, we are mindful of the fact that under the two-thirds proportional, many independents will get nothing because their proportion of the 400 seats in parliament will only be one seat anyway, and it will be a problem. But we want to look at this one set, whether it is fair that a political party with so many members and so many activities get the same amount as one person who is an independent. So we are saying to solve that problem, we are proposing that whatever amount is distributed to parties, you get a quarter of a percentage per seat, so that an independent will get a quarter of a percentage, and whoever has got many more seats will multiply according to a number of seats, but all that money will be distributed in a fair manner according to your strength. That is the proposal we are making. This will apply also to all legislatures, where the total available allocation should be divided by the seats to determine the amount paid out per seat to parties and independents. In other words, we are asking that the formula of two-thirds and one-third be left in favor of the formula for seats. Areas of money that should be excluded from donation and limits in the Act. We also, Chairperson, realizing that parties earn from their investment, from shareholdings and commercial activities. Some parties do have commercial activities, and we believe that should be excluded and not be named a donation. It should be controlled, obviously, in terms of our democracy and our laws, but we believe it should not be called a donation because it is not. The relevant taxes may still have to be paid on some of these items. Next. Can you move on? We are also proposing in the principles that membership fees, levies to our various members, subscriptions and other funds contributed by members of the party as members of a voluntary association. We are also saying they must not be regarded as donation. If I join a particular party and pay a membership fee, if they levy me and say every month we want you to pay so much, which I believe many parties are already doing, if people subscribe to various parties, etc., that money should not be regarded as a donation. It should rather be regarded as a contribution of a member who wants to contribute voluntarily because of their association with that particular party. Way forward, we should unpack and debate these principles as parties represented in parliament and remain engaged with and responsive to public participation. The portfolio committee needs to craft amendments guided by our overall objective to secure our democracy. We also need a clear legal way forward on what should be contained in the Act as amended and what should be in the regulations to accommodate both parties and independents. Yes, Chairperson, our objective here is that both parties and independents must be equally happy. And you are aware we are doing this for the first time. We've never had independence before. So this will be a challenge on how to strike a balance to what we used to do and what we used to have and what will then be having during the 2024 election. Thank you very much, Chairperson. That will be the end of that document. And Chairperson, I propose, I don't know, that I go to the next document before we start with discussion.
Yeah, proceed, Minister.
Yeah, Muzi, can you put the next document? Yes.
Can you see it, Minister?
No, it's not on the screen. I can't see it if it's not there. And I don't think any other person can see it.
Yeah. Honorable members, this part is the actual proposal on amendment save the principles as led to you. I am putting amendments which we all know are technical. Whether we like it or not, they have to happen. But we are putting them in front of you so that you can engage with them. If you think something is not right or it's not put correctly, you can correct. And let me explain so that when we go through it, we can navigate very easily. Where you see a word in bracket, this square bracket, that is the word we are removing from the Party Funding Act 6 of 2018. That means the act that needs to be amended. We are looking at it and say in the amendment, this is what we need to remove. We'll put that in a square bracket, as you can see there, the word party. Where we are adding something, that which we are adding will be underlined. Where we are inserting a new new paragraph altogether or a new section, will also inform you. So if we have to go section by section, section one there, the title of the Political Funding Act number 6 of 2018, here after referred to as the Funding Act, is amended by substitution of the following title, Political Funding Act. In other words, we remove the word party. It doesn't become Political Party Funding Act, it becomes Political Funding Act, because when you say party, you exclude independent. So the word party is hereby excluded. Next, then the long title of the act is amended as follows. What we are doing, Chairperson, because to save time, I don't need to read all these sentences. We are just inserting where it was saying, for instance, act to provide for and regulate the public and private funding of political parties. Now, we just add the word an independent candidate and independent representatives, because if it ends with political parties, it means we are excluding what the Constitutional Court instructed us to do. So we're adding the word independent candidates and independent representatives. And honorable members, I also need to explain what is the difference between an independent candidate and an independent representative. There are huge differences, but we need to use both terms. When in the case of this act, when we say an independent candidate, we are meaning a person who has been nominated to stand for elections, has not yet won, but he has been nominated. And we propose that we put a definition of nominated. What do you mean when we say somebody has been nominated? Do you just mean that somebody wake up and said, look, so-and-so wants to nominate me, then I'm a candidate? No. A person who is nominated and can be called an independent candidate is a person who meets two characteristics. One, that she or he has already been able to acquire 15%. You remember the 15% of the votes which you agreed on in the act. 15% of signatures, rather, not votes. A person who has been able to acquire 15% of the signatures, and secondly, has successfully paid the money that IEC wants, the deposit that IEC wants. Once these things have been done, that person is an independent candidate and is recognized as such. On the other hand, an independent representative is a person that has already been voted in, he's already got a seat in parliament, so he is a representative. And so, as you can see throughout that, there's a word independent candidate and independent representatives. Can we go to section three? Number three there, on the preamble, we are doing the same thing, honorable members. You can see the underlying part here. We also added the word about public and private funding. These are new words which are added in the previous act. The act was saying, and whereas section 24 of the Constitution affords Parliament legislative authority to pass legislation with regard to any matter which will include to private to regulate private funding of political parties. We are aiding as well as the public and private funding of independent candidates and independent representatives. And then we go on to, at the bottom there, to add independent candidates and representatives. Can we go on? Can we go on number four? Take it up so that I can read it, yes. Section number four, as you can see there, there's a square bracket where we are removing the word represented, and they were removing the word party. And they have added independent and representatives so that it will read, funds mean the multi-party and independent democracy fund and the political representatives fund. We remove the word represented and party there. I think it's straightforward. Okay, can we move on? There's just an insertion there about what an independent candidate is. Next. And also an independent representative. I've already explained that. Yes, these are just, again, the technical removals of party and aiding of representatives and all that. Can we move on? Can you move on? Yes, the amendment of Section 2.1 of the Act. Section 6 of the Funding Act is amended by the substitution of the following section. Again, honorable members, is just to remove the word represented and leave political and add representative so that becomes political representative fund. I think we have already gone past that. Can you go on, please? We are at number 6 and 7. I think, yes, number 6 and 7 is same thing. We just added independence. Can we pass? Can we move on to the next section, please? Section 6 of the Funding Act is amended by substitution of the following. Again, these were just substitutions and removal. Can you move on, please? Nothing substantive about it. Can you move on? Go to 9. Yes, again, there is nothing untoward or substantive. It's just technical amendments and insertions. Next. Yes, again, it is the heading of Chapter 3 of the Funding Act, where we are substituting by adding the word independent candidate and independent representative. Next. Can we go to number 11? Yes, again, you see similar things happening there about amending. Honorable members, can we move on to 12? Section 12, please. Honorable members, again, there is nothing to write home about. No substantive thing, again, technical. Can we move to section 13? Yes, section 13, honorable members. We are asking honorable members to debate this issue. We are proposing that Section 10 of the Act, Act Number 6 of 2018, be deleted. And our reasons, honorable members, why we want that to be deleted, subject to your approval, is that maybe I need to read exactly what is that we propose must be deleted, because we just think it doesn't make sense. Section 10 of the Act passed in 2018, it says, 10.1 says, no person or entity may deliver a donation to a member of a political party other than for party political purposes. I'm repeating, no person or entity may deliver a donation to a member of a political party other than for party political purposes. 10, subsection 2 reads, a member of a political party may only receive a donation contemplated in subsection 1 on behalf of the party, not on their behalf. 3, no person may circumvent subsection 1 or 2 or any of the provisions of this chapter. Now, Chairperson, what is our problem here? Our problem is all of us as members of parliament, when we receive any gifts or donation, we declare them, and there's a law, and will be punished if we do not do so. Now, this act does not talk about us. It talks about a member of a political party, any member. And all the parties have got members all over the country. Ordinary members who hold no office, but they believe in that party. They went to get membership of that party and pay for that membership. If you read this section correctly, and if anybody believes we are reading wrongly, that we are wrong, that's why I say it needs to be debated. This section says that member of a political party may not receive money from any source except it is for party political purposes. And that nobody might try to circumvent this, which means it's an offense if any member of a party receives money. Now, our question is, if I've got a funeral, I'm an ordinary member of a party, I don't hold any office, I'm not even a councillor where they'll say I've got influence. I just had to join that party as an ordinary member. I'm not even known. One day I've got a funeral and some people come and make contributions so that I'm able to bury my beloved one. That is a donation. As far as I'm concerned, when I read this section, and I'm not doing it for party political purposes, as the section is saying, I'm using it to bury my beloved one because I was short of money and neighbors are coming to help me. Now, that is our problem, Chair. The second problem, we've discussed this with the IEC. Ever since the Act was passed, was the IEC able to police it? Are they able to police ordinary members of the political party who received money from where, when they are not councillors, they are not members of provincial legislature, they are not office bearers in a party, they are not branch BEC members, branch executive members. They are just ordinary people. But that's how we read it. And we think we are inordinately criminalizing ordinary members of political parties. They will inadvertently find themselves having gone foul of the law without being aware of it. And at any rate, if the IEC over a period of 4 years have never been able to police this, why is it remaining on the statutes? And honorable members, it's inconceivable to believe that all the political parties that are here, none of their members ever received money anywhere for their own community needs. Communities do this type of thing all the time, in stock fairs, in just as ordinary donation. In the area where I come from, whenever there's a funeral, etc., there's somebody holding a book where people come and donate money just to record and say, look, we want to help you to run this funeral. As far as you are concerned, according to this act, it must not happen. If that person who is receiving happened to have joined any political party that is in existence in the country. So we are asking you if you can allow that this be deleted, honorable members. Can we move on? Yeah, can 14 is just technical, as I said, 15 also is just adding independence and independence. Can you move to 16? 16? Yes. Now, this section, honorable members, is a section to regulate deposits of monies into account. Deposit of all donations received by that political party, membership fees, levies employed by a political party on its representatives into account with a bank registered as a bank, blah, blah. They're just regulating that all the money should resist from your members, etc. How is that money regulated in terms of banking details, etc.? Now, as you can see, it says political party. If I read A, it says deposits of all donations received by that political party. But previously, we were saying everywhere where there's a word political party, we also add independent or independent representative or independent candidate. Here, we are not doing so for the simple reason that the manner in which parties are regarded are required to deposit their donations. For political parties, it will be completely independent. I mean, different from independent. It won't be the same. So we can't independent at independent here. So what we have done, we've left 12, section 12 of the Act as our new section 16. We have left it as it is with political parties. What we have done, rather, can you move on? Can you move on? Yes. Yes. What we have done throughout all that is how the accounts are audited. The audit team has done this way and that way. Can you move on? Yes. Yeah, so it's for political parties. What we have done, we have now added an insertion on Section 12A. Instead of adding political party, independent, etc., no. We leave political party, but we do 12A as an insertion. And that insertion then deals with independence. It says an independent representative must deposit all donations received into an account with a bank registered, blah, blah, blah. So they are regulated. The political parties are regulated by the new Section 16, and the independence will be regulated by the new Section 17. Can we move on? So I think we are just doing that otherwise to make it easy, because it will become a mess if we start putting them in the same basket. Can we move on to 18? Is also technical amendment, Chair. There's nothing to write home about. 19, veto. We just removing there the word political parties and adding independent candidates. Can we move on? 20, same thing. 21, same thing. 22, same thing. Then we go to 23. In 23, really a small technical sec, you see we have put 10 in brackets, section 10 in brackets there. If you agree that we remove that section 10, then on this section 23A, we also remove it. But because it has not yet been agreed that it be removed, we've put it in brackets there, but square brackets to show that our intention is to remove it if honorable members agree. Can we move on to 24? Same thing. Section 25. We want that section to be substituted by the following subsection. The president acting on a resolution of the National Assembly may by proclamation in the Gazette make regulations in respect of matters contemplated in those sections that are written there. And there are sections that have been added there. That's why they are underlined. The insertion of the following subsection 5 and 6 after subsection 4. The regulation in Schedule 2 are transitional regulations. Once the president exercises power under subsection 1 to make regulations, the regulation in Schedule 2 shall become inoperative. Chairperson, this is Schedule 2 of the previous Act. The regulations there were said to be transitional. If we pass this amendment, the president will be required to do regulations again, in which case, once he has done so, the previous regulations fall off altogether, because now it will be regulations of a new legislation. 26, same. 27, same. And that will be the end, honorable members. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm done.
Thank you, Minister, for the brief, members. These are the two presentations on the principle we must consider for dealing with the party political funding, and also the amendments that have been presented by the Minister. Technical areas which have been identified. Will comment on the each two presentations. As I know that the IEC also later, not today, will also give a presentation on some of the amendments in relation to this consequential. Can I invite members to comment on the two matters presented by the minister? Then we'll and guide on how we're going to deal with this matter as I've alerted in the opening. And I would invite Honorable Ross, Honorable Pile, Honorable Dejana, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Mudisemta, Honorable Bongo. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I think it's difficult for us to comment. We received this document very late, last night at 11 p.m., I think it was. So I think it's certainly worth noting, but we need to be able to go and engage with it and then come back and then engage further with the minister. Because my challenge as well is we received a presentation in February, the 7th of February, where we were essentially advised by the parliamentary legal advisors that executive bill process will take too long and that we need a committee omnibus bill. So what we have here today is some proposals on, from the minister on one of the consequential amendments. There are others. There's the Electronic Communications Act. There's the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act. There are constitutional amendments. There are other amendments, which I don't see here. So, Chairperson, we do need to be able to go away and process these proposals before we can engage on them, is my point of view. I do have another question in terms of the Electoral Amendment Act, whether we are now busy, whether the Minister is now busy with the process of establishing the Electoral Reform Consultation Panel, whether that four-month process has begun and what is going on in that regard. But Chair, I do believe we need to get to a point very soon where we say we have a committee, we're going with a committee bill, we're going with an executive bill. But what's been presented today and given to us far too late is only a part of the different amendments. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ross. Honorable Pile.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, firstly, let me say that we appreciate the first presentation in terms of principles and outlining certain key principles. And I think we fully subscribe and endorse that. But Chair, I want to agree that you have outlined at the beginning of this meeting that we've received the presentation very late last night. There was no space for us to even be able to dissect it, further to have consultations, etc. And Chair, in light of that, it's going to be premature for me to even raise item by item at this stage. And I want to support that we be allowed the space to be able to dissect, discuss and consult, and then come back to committee on our deliberations and even suggestions and input. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Pile, Honorable Tetana.
Chair, thanks, Chair. I think it will be unfair for us and the constituencies and the parties we are representing to just engage. Let us be given time, Chair, so that we are able to do the necessary things. I'm joining these members who spoke before me to say that can we be allowed space so that we are able to deal with this issue before we can come and make contributions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tetana. Honorable Kanyile. Okay, Honorable Modisem, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I will also align my thinking towards what the members would have said, that we be allowed space to go and make some consultations with our different caucuses and come back and have an engagement on this document. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Mudisimta. Honorable Bongani Bongo.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I would like to thank the minister for the good presentation, and also to thank the minister that at least they now responded to what Parliament has always requested that they do. And indeed, like you said, we know that the document came very late. It is maybe subject to some of those consultations, but we appreciate that it's here, late as it is, but I can see there's a lot of quality work which was put on the document. Maybe we must be allowed that space for this mini consultation. Then we'll, in a written form, comment to the good work done by the department. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Bongani Bongo. Members, this okay, Minister, there's a question from Honorable Ross. I think that's the only one question that is raised, so that we take account to summarize how we must proceed. If you can comment on that. Is the Minister still online? Okay, Deputy Minister.
I'm sorry. I was muted. I was not aware I'm muted. I was speaking aloud, Chairperson. Sorry.
Okay.
My apologies. Okay. Yeah, I'm saying his question is whether, as contemplated by the Act rather, whether the process is on to choose that panel that is going to work on the new electoral system for the country. Yes. We have started that process, will be reporting to you very soon. You are aware that it entails the minister advertising publicly for particular names with the people with attributes that are written in the act itself. So we are busy doing that. The second thing, Chairperson, yes, I agree with members. I'm aware that we gave you this very late because we were waiting on this with the same senior counsel who helped us to draft the act that has been passed. We did not want to look for a different senior counsel. We thought it's better to use the one who has already been with us for the past 2 years navigating this route. Unfortunately, he went overseas and we're trying our best to communicate over the what you call across the oceans with him. And we only were able to complete last night. So I am painfully aware of that, and I accept when honorable members say they must go back and consult. And you may remember that I started exactly with those words. The last thing, Chairperson, is the issue of other amendments. I presume Honorable Rose actually gave an example of electronic management, etc. Some of them, honorable members, won't necessarily be passed by this committee. I presume that one, electronic voting, etc., belongs to another committee altogether. I'm speaking under correction. But I heard Honorable Rios mentioning constitutional amendments. And by so saying, I presume he's referring to Section 236 of the Constitution. I just want to remind honorable members that throughout the whole debate, right from the beginning of this act, various experts said there's no, they actually denied because some of us were thinking so. I also thought, and I said so many publicly, it was even in the papers, that we cannot do what the Constitutional Court has said without amending the Constitution. And those people who believe
amending the constitution is a mischievous thing to do, went on me and say, yeah, Mutuali, he said the constitution must be amended. I was referring to section 236. Many experts said it shouldn't be. There's no reason, because it says government must enact a law to make sure that political parties are funded, etc. Many experts argue that that does not exclude independence, but others argue that to make it very clear so that there is no argument, that section must be amended to be very clear. So it's still a debate. I don't know, honorable members may go to their parties and their experts to see, because if we now have to amend the constitution, that section 236, even if it's just a small thing, it's going to take us time again. But we are leaving you again. Please let it be the area of your consultation with your parties. But as far as I'm concerned, many experts argue that there is no need to tamper with the constitution in whatever form. Thank you very much, honorable members.
Thank you very much, Minister. Thanks, members. We'll grant the period for members to go and consult with their caucuses on the two presentations, and I think including the principles outlined that must guide our deliberations. Members are considering to have time to deal with that, and I think that is will be our resolve of the committee. It is true that there are certain amendments that must be done by other institutions or portfolio committees. I'm fully aware as the electronic amendment that must be done by ICASA. So we'll await that process on the brief in detail on some of the issues that are going to be carried, particularly by the IEC in their response comments in our next session. Mr. Matondzi, what it means is that we may need to, again, to look to check our, and particularly check with members in terms of the extra day we can get on the week, and I'm not referring this week, so that we focus particularly on this item of the consequential amendment. It would be important that we pay more attention to that so that we're able to close up this matter. We'll interact with the IEC in our next committee meeting and the Parliamentary Legal Service in our next committee meeting. Does that assist us, Mr. Matondzi, to consider that extra day so that we're able to deal, given the program of the committee for this term? Can you assist us in that front, on that front?
Yes, Chairperson, we'll consider it. Probably it will be on Friday. I'll have to check parliamentary program first.
Yeah, let's just look at a check on the parliamentary program, and then we request from the Chair of Chairs to authorize us for Friday. As I'm saying, that not this Friday, but we'll look on the Fridays so that we're able to deal with that. If we don't win, we manage to see it that in a portfolio committee meetings, we are able to have a slot to deal with this matter. And members will have time, at least by then, to have consulted with the caucuses to deal with this process. Members, I think that will take us to stand off this item. We will have the conversation with the Parliamentary Legal Service tomorrow to deal with two issues, including this consequential amendment. And I'm referring to the chair and the content advisor, and also the matter that we've dealt with in our last committee meeting in relation to the Eastern Cape lending issues. Mr. Matondzi, is there any other matter?
No, Chair, there's no other matter.
Okay. Members, thanks very much. If there's no any other matter, we'll stand off this item. Thanks, Minister. Thanks, and your team. Commissioner Mashinini, now that you're standing on the IEC, is there any other matter you want to alert the committee?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. The the comments one wanted to make on behalf of the commission. Firstly, is that we thank and we've noted the presentation that the minister has just shared with yourselves, and as the commission, we also and will undertake to apply ourselves to the minister's proposals. However, from the administration, technically, the commission wishes to inform the honorable members that there are also administrative amendments that the commission has been looking into to enhance the efficiency of the application of this legislation. And we would liaise with the Honorable Chair about the opportunity to present those administrative amendments that the IEC proposes. And just in conclusion, is also to just indicate that the elections are next year. And in all our endeavors and various activities that we are to undertake, we need to keep in the back of our minds that we should be in a position to do everything in time to enable us to discharge that constitutional responsibility. And for that, I would like to thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And lastly, just to correct something that Commissioner Masogo has managed to join us, and the DCO, Mr. Shiburi, also managed to join us. Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, Honorable Members. Thank you, Minister and Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Mashinini, and all the commissioners and your executive team. Members will stand off this item, and I think we'll take note of the issues Commissioner Mashinini has just raised for our attention. Thanks very much, members, minister, and all the team in attendance. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you.